Hey, this is a Pray for Surf podcast. Phil Migliorati here with David Beard and Gary Griffin, and you guys are already rocking and rolling talking about what day this is, a couple special marks of this day. Fill us in real quick, and then we'll jump into our conversation.
Dave, you take this one.
Okay, is Marks the operative word? I think it is, because today is David Marks' birthday, August 22nd. So I think that's the operative word there.
So
happy birthday, David Marks.
How old would he be now?
Oh, 50? No. Actually, he is the youngest, so I think he is. Let me look.
I think he was born in 48. I think he was born in 1948. That's my guess.
He was. Yeah.
So that makes him 65, right? 65.
Well,
48.
He's 65 now. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, so he was 13 years old when he started with the Beach Boys, something like that.
Yeah, isn't that crazy?
13 years old.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. He's a good guy. We're gonna go to Italy with him in a couple weeks. The Surf City All Stars are gonna play a big festival over there in southern Italy with Dave Marks. Really looking forward to that.
That's gonna be cool.
Yeah, that's gonna be fantastic.
Bring me back some food.
I'll do that. I will do that. Yes, absolutely.
Some sort of Italian cuisine.
Yeah, we can do that.
Okay.
Yep. So what do we talk about?
And then the other anniversary that deserves mentioning on this day 36 years ago was the release of Dennis Wilson's Pacific Ocean Blue album, an incredible release. And Gary mentioned that it was within 2 weeks of that release, because Love You had just gotten released around that time too,
uh-huh,
that Gary joined the Beach Boys.
Yeah, just a couple weeks later, I got a call out of the blue from Mike Love saying they were going to move their entire operation to Fairfield, Iowa, to the Maharishi International University, and would I like to come join the band? And, of course, after I picked up the phone and dropped it on the phone, I said, oh, I think I could, let me check my calendar, I think I could fit that in. life-changing phone call for me.
Had you gigged with them before, or they might, obviously you knew each other, what can you tell us?
I had met them just by being around, just by hanging out at their shows every time they came to the Cincinnati area, which is where I'm from. I would just for about the previous 6 years or so, I would just go and hang out and just be in the way, always telling them about this great band I had and all the great songs I was writing. And so Love, Mike finally took a chance on me. He had heard the stuff I'd recorded. I guess he liked it enough to at least call me. So it was quite a break. It was quite an out-of-the-blue break. I didn't expect it, but boy, it was something
very cool.
Yeah.
Well, we've got to get to Bamboo Trading Company, but I do have to ask you the question. So you step on stage with the Beach Boys. I'm sure there's some rehearsals. I mean, was it a big learning curve for you to know all the nuances of the arrangements? How'd that work?
We rehearsed at MIU in Fairfield, Iowa. We were recording and rehearsing at the same time in, like, September of 77, and it was pretty intense. So we just learned the whole set there. Learning curve, I was such a fan that I knew the songs. I knew them all very well. I just had to learn their little idiosyncrasies of how the songs were performed by them, which didn't take long. No, it was pretty easy transition.
Very cool. Well, let's start here with this Bamboo Trading Company. Brand new. David, you just Dropboxed me the stuff, and I'm enjoying listening to it and looking at these great album notes. I mean, there's so much good stuff in there that tells the story, if people know some of the personnel, tells a great story of just what this group has become and I hope can be. But, Gary, maybe you start. How did you guys get together to do this? David, you're Endless Summer Quarterly and all sorts of other stuff. You have plenty to do. Gary, you're Surf City All-Stars, some recording stuff that you're doing. Nobody needed another group, I don't think. So how'd this idea happen?
Well, but nobody needed this.
No, that's right.
That's what everybody says about every record they make nowadays.
That's well said, Phil.
Nobody really needs this record, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Well, I didn't mean the music. The music is great. I'm glad. But no. You guys didn't need another thing on your plate is what I meant to say.
I get you now. I see. Boy, he listens to one listen, and now I said nobody needs this record.
Yeah, thanks a lot,
Phil. That's a great review.
Thanks.
A rave rave review, boy.
That's
no.
the last time I drop a box on you.
This is a wonderful
Dude.
Record that nobody needs.
That's right. Well,
anyway,
they need the music. They just don't need the group.
That's right. That's what it is. No, this
well,
is fun.
This
is
we love you. We need you. I grovel. I'm sorry. I didn't mean that.
Well, I just think to touch on what Gary was saying about when he kind of joined the Beach Boys, you know, he was a fan and he knew the music. It was just kind of my, you know, from doing ESQ now for 20 years, it was almost kind of just for me peripherally and just kind of that same respect and admiration musically was there. And I just knew I wanted to, you know, just to have a chance to work with Gary was just going to be a hoot, and it was.
Yeah, sure was. But do we go into the story of how this all came about? How this
I think so, yeah. We should kind of touch this all thanks to some shrews.
Some nasty killer shrews. That's how it happened. You tell the story, Dave.
Okay, well, I touched on this yesterday. Our good buddy Steve Latshaw had gotten his friend James Best, who I told you about yesterday, is known for most widely known for his role as Roscoe P. Coltrane on Dukes of Hazzard. Well, Steve and James wrote a script revisiting a 1959. I wouldn't even call it a B horror film. I call it more like a Q horror film. It's further down in the alphabet.
It's so odd. It's just twisted and creepy. It's not even a B horror.
It's not. It's something way further back.
Q for Quirk.
But it's odd. And James starred in that original one, and it was 1959, and he and Steve really liked the idea of revisiting that character, and Steve and I got talking, and long story short, I just said, I'd love to help put together some music for your film with you, and the guy I think I'd like to work with, the first name that came to mind was Gary Griffin.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually the thing that was always kind of in my mind about Gary, because I've heard him, like, he did the B, you know, he's on so many different projects. Like, I mentioned this yesterday, like Brian Wilson, a lot of Brian stuff, What Love Can Do, some of the reimagines Gershwin, some of the In the Key of Disney, you know, recorded on Do It Again with the Beach Boys back in 2011. So Gary's kind of everywhere, and we don't know it. And what I was really interested in that struck me more than anything was Gary wrote a song called I Wanted You to Know, and he recorded it with Jeff Foskett. And I ended up putting that on a Dennis Wilson tribute CD in ESQ back in, what was it, Gary, 2003, 2004, something like that?
I don't know what year that was.
It was a while back, and I just was, it reminded me of Pet Sounds. It was just this really evocative,
wow,
emotional piece.
That's a compliment. Thank you.
Really cool. You know, the percussion in it, everything was just really, I really was able to pick up on where Gary was really influenced and then dialed in. And I heard something that I hadn't heard before because, you know, Gary's just so good at replicating those songs when he performs in concert. You know, I think fans in general just take it for granted that these guys are up there performing the music so well. We don't really pay attention to really what it takes to get it, you know, to know it and to understand the music. And so when I heard I Wanted You to Know, I just was really floored, and it kind of had been in the back of my mind all that time. So when I, you know, Gary being out in California, in Steve's vicinity, it just made sense if Gary said yes, that would be the way to go. And lucky for us, Gary said yes.
Yes.
Now, what was that? At that point, were you guys simply trying to put a few songs together for the soundtrack? Was the Bamboo Trading Company even a twinkle in your eye at that point? Gary, what did you think you were getting into?
Well, I never know what I'm getting into. No, we didn't. We didn't have any plans to do a record out of this. The first thing we thought about possibly doing would be a soundtrack record for the movie. But we didn't. We didn't follow up on that. We decided to shift it over to the Bamboo Trading Company. You know, sort of an artist-driven project rather than just assembling music that was used in the movie. Because Steve used a lot of different pieces in the movie that it wouldn't have made a very cohesive record. But we did have. I think we had four songs in the movie, something like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Four songs. So those were the starting point for the Bamboo Trading Company. We developed those four songs, kind of gave them a little musical thematic, sort of a similar vibe, so that it made a cohesive record. And then we just went on from there and just started creating other pieces of music for it. So we never, ever did a soundtrack record for the movie. But that's all right.
Well, it's... Somebody looks at the lineup of Bamboo Trading Company and say Surf City All-Stars, a lot of similarity. I mean, great guys. Uh-huh. Gary, you're there. Matt, Randell, Philip, others. You may want to list through them.
Yeah.
How is BTC different than what Surf City All-Stars do?
Well, Surf City All-Stars is primarily just a live group. We do lots and lots of live shows, corporate parties and festivals and things like that. We've done some recording. We've done several records, but this project... we just sort of assembled a different group of those guys. Randell plays primarily with Mike Love and the Beach Boys, and Matt, Phil, and I do play in the Surf City All-Stars together. So, it's not completely the Surf City All-Stars. That's a different entity. Different.
In my sense, the Surf City All-Stars is more than a cover band, but you certainly cover a lot of great Jan and Dean and Beach Boys songs for live
experience. Oh, yeah,
that's
our selling point. That's how we get work.
Yeah.
Yep.
Which is phenomenal. But for me, what excites me about listening to BTC here is there's a Beach Boy vibe, a Jan and Dean vibe, the influence, the inspiration's there. But it's not trying to, I don't know what word to use, cover is not the right word, but it's not just trying to replicate. It seems to have its own life. Is that fair to say? Is that what you guys are trying to do?
Oh, sure. Yeah, we didn't try to just copy the Beach Boys, hardly at all, really. There's a couple of vocal passages, but for the most part, we just kind of created our own sound. A lot of it's very percussion-driven. You might call it kind of tiki-ish, but there are some great harmonies. But it's not. We didn't think. We never went about it thinking, what would Brian do? It wasn't like that.
Yeah, it has its own fingerprint or voice print, I guess would
right,
be the way of saying
right.
it. Even though, like you say, some great harmonies. Gary, David, you want to point out a song or two that they all stand out for different reasons, but maybe some that have some of the Beach Boy harmony sounds, or I love some of the Carnival sounds in there. Bamboo, reminds us
for
of...
Me, yeah, for me, the just Kitty Hawk, the whole experience for me, I just got to, I still really, I think the best thing I could probably say about the album is I still enjoy listening to it. And I've been listening to it for a long time because, we've been working on it for so long. So the fact that I still enjoy it, that speaks to me on just a musical level. These guys just, you did the names you mentioned, plus Chris English and Miami Danielle. I mean, it was just so cool to kind of just sit back and watch them. And I use this word very respectfully. They did it with such ease. It was just kind of mind-blowing because they're just that good. I mean, Gary would kind of get, I'll give you an example. Gary would look at Phil and say, okay, here's, do you want to try this or do you want to try this? Phil try it, and like three takes later, he nail it, So three takes, and he had it. Then he double himself, and if needed, maybe he triple himself in a different octave, different range, and before you know it, the track would be done, And it was just super cool to be able to watch these guys work together.
Yeah, it's a blessing to be able to work with these guys. I've worked with them for so long that we do have a shorthand thing in the studio. We don't have to explain. We don't have to go long explanation for everything we want to do. We just kind of know what's right and what needs to be done, and we can work very quickly. It's great. It's fun.
Well, listening to you guys talk about the process, and also just listening for myself and kind of trying to sense, you know, what might have happened in the studio. This seems like, maybe we don't, folks don't use this term anymore, but it's almost like a super group of individuals who have their own careers, their own styles, have worked together maybe a little bit here, a little bit there, but
yeah,
have come together for something new and fresh, and I hope this is just the first album, not the only one. You guys mm-hmm. have thoughts of going beyond this.
Yep. That's good.
Well,
yeah,
there's always ideas and there's always creativity, so... We're just kind of thinking for, you know, I'm always, you can ask Gary, I'm so full of ideas, it's kind of, you have to kind of put me in a jar sometimes and put a lid on it and make sure I tighten it.
We do poke holes in the top so we can breathe. But...
and throw grasshoppers down so we can eat.
Yeah, that's
well,
right.
Well, one of the things that I think people will maybe wonder about, first of all, I want to say there's a Facebook page for the Bamboo Trading Company. If someone's listening and this is their first hearing of anything BTC, you can check out the Facebook page as we're talking here. But one of the things people might wonder about is, you know, it's kind of from Kitty Hawk to Search City. Was this going to be a city-by-city thing? How did that idea come? It almost sounds a little Smile-esque, not in the sense of psychedelic style, but, you know, wanting to do the westward expansion thing. So what is Kitty Hawk to Surf City, how does that influence or impact the songs, the lyrics, the progression?
Oh, wow.
Gary, would you like me to?
Well, I can speak from my own experience on that, the concept of Kitty Hawk to Surf City. So that's kind of how my life went. You know, Kitty Hawk, I would say, is my upbringing, my roots, which was in Ohio, and I always,
okay,
always wanted to move out to California and pursue music, and it was a dream, and I was so fortunate that the Beach Boys enabled me to do that. I don't know if I would have done it. I don't know if I would have gotten out here, but they made it real easy. You know, when you got a job with the Beach Boys, it makes it kind of easy to move to California, but that's kind of what that concept means to me. It's just, my life's journey, whatever it may be, from Cincinnati to Surf City.
Well, I can identify certainly with the want to. I'm a Chicago boy and still in Chicago, but made, you know, many trips into California with that wish. Boy, would it be great to live here, hang out here, you know, be
mm-hmm.
part of that music thing. So Kitty Hawk really doesn't have to be just Kitty Hawk and Ohio. It can be a guy from Chicago listening to the music saying, would it be head out that way?
Yeah,
Kitty
and I
Hawk
think that's,
has to do with Kitty Hawk has to do with flying and taking wings and kind of moving from where you are and, you know, making a change.
You know, I was going to say that really is reflected in Randell's lyric at the bridge, where in that first release, where he says, "I want to soar," you know, and then he says, "There must be more out there in California." I mean, that kind of, man, when he wrote that and came up with that part, I just went, "Oh yeah." It was like one of those nice goosebud moments. It was just really perfect. And you could tell, like Gary just gave his example, you could tell they all had some sort of, they all were drawing some sort of personal reference and really kind of connecting with the idealism that's you know, directly influenced from that comes from California.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you kick off the album with Kitty Hawk and precede that with Airborne, I mean, beautiful sounds, it's just it really does lift you and kind of set you off flying in that direction. It's a great start. The chronology of how you put the songs next, how you place them, did it just seem to naturally flow out of that, or did you guys feel like there were a lot of different ways you could have put it?
Well,
sometimes
Dave,
that's the most difficult.
Dave was responsible for that, and he had about 15 billion incarnations of the song list prior to the one we settled on. That's probably not an exaggeration. You take those titles and find out how many combinations there are. That's how many we looked at. But this one turned out really well. Is there any?
And the thing that made it, the reason I had come up with those different ideas was the thing that kind of was really interesting to me when working on the sequence was that a lot of the songs worked off each other no matter where you place them. So that's kind of what really made it a challenge during that sequencing process, because we had more material. We had a couple more instrumentals that we were trying to kind of, you know, massage into the flow of things. And when it was finally released and sequenced the way that it is, it just, you know, that's the way it kind of felt right to everyone.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Well, it seems to flow well. I'm kind of jumping from the beginning and now to the end. You conclude with the reentry Airborne, which I think is perfect. And just before that, your theme. But the song before that, David, you mentioned earlier when we talked, Don't Say It's Over. There's some special meanings to that. Did that just always seem to fit best near the end? Or maybe not. But what did that song mean to you, and why is that a good placement?
I guess by the title, it works towards the end, because just that phrase, you know, don't say it's over, you know, just let your CD player loop this around again, just let it start over. I guess that's one way to look at it for this album. Don't Say It's Over, as I told you, Phil, was a song that was inspired by the passing of Jan Barry. And when I originally wrote it, I did, and it's kind of mirrored in the lyrics a little bit, that it's kind of like one guy talking to another guy. We, the two of us type of thing. So it's kind of like Jan and Dean. But it kind of took on a larger kind of an all-encompassing, it could be any group type of thing. But you could certainly, for me personally, because that's what inspired it, it will always have that meaning at the base of it. And then Randell, bless him, came along with the idea. It was very interesting. He heard the song, and we were talking on the phone one day, and he said, hey, do you mind if I put a James Bond reference in the song? And I had no idea what that meant. I mean, I know who James Bond is, but I didn't know what it meant in terms of putting it in the song. And, you know, fast forward to the point where he had it. And I went to Gary and I said, I'm not against this, because Goldfinger is my favorite James Bond film. So when Randell came up with the, you know, Odd Job and Sean Connery on Mission Beach, I thought, oh, my God, I love it, because that's my favorite James Bond film. But I thought, I just asked Gary, I said, what do you think? And Gary said, this is perfect. This is kind of like the Jan and Dean relationship. And I went, oh. So I said, oh, there you go. So, and it turned out great. I mean, Randell, just listen to that guy's voice. Ugh.
Yeah.
Man.
Well, and I think folks who love to listen to the music, but also maybe dig in a little bit, will find things like that in other tunes that you guys have put on this CD. It's a great listen.
Well, sure.
But also something.
And our buddy, and our buddy Dean Torrence is on there.
That's right.
For sure. Yeah.
You got him to drive up from Huntington Beach a couple times. Not an easy thing to do, but he did it.
That's right.
At the video, which is, I believe, is it the trailer, the video for the movie, and mm-hmm. Dean and Bruce Davison are on there, and it just looks like Dean is having a ball, having a blast, and his typical goofing around self, at least in that video shoot, but it's great to have his voice on this album.
Yeah, he had a great time. He's a clever guy, and he makes the most out of these recording situations. He always comes up with some zany ideas.
Yeah, and it's so subtle. You don't see it's coming, and then all of a sudden it's right there. it's not subtle when it's happening, but before it happens, you don't know, but then it's there, and it's just when I watched the raw footage of him doing his thing, I was in tears. So it's just so subtle, but. He's a master at that. He's just a master.
Oh, yeah.
Well, one of the things, and this goes way back, but you mentioned, of course, Jan Barry's passing, but certainly at the time of his accident back in the 60s, and that 66 or so, I believe. But, you know, every once in a while I'll pull out their Batman record, and it's just the humor there is just, to me, you know, outstanding. On their I forget who put it out, but you know, their compilation disc.
The anthology, you mean?
Maybe it was not their album. I should have pulled it out. But anyway, they have some cuts of them doing for radio stations. Jan and Dean and stuff. And most people, I'm guessing, would think, you know, why listen to this stuff? I mean, it's just hilarious. And it's all spontaneous.
Yeah.
And obviously, Dean still has that.
Yeah, well, actually, you know, Jan still had it too, even in his latter years. He's still had a very good sense of humor, and he and Dean would do these little skits, these little funny little things for us that they did back in the old days, and they were just, Jan would hang right in there, and he was funny as could be. Jan had a great sense of humor. Yeah, a lot of people don't know that.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah,
I should have checked. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that the great thing that is out there that people can hear of Jan and Dean humor from the Jan and Dean perspective is Batman tends to be a little pre-adolescent. I mean, it's very my 11-year-old loves it. But the album they were going to release after Batman, Filet of Soul, never got released the way it should have been. And Dean condensed it into the fourth side of the anthology album. So if you get that two CD set, the anthology album, it's on CD. I think it's on iTunes. If you get from the what's considered the fourth side on, you're hearing an abridged, condensed, mixed by Dean version of the Jan and Dean Filet of Soul album. And it's pretty interesting because it's kind of humor with. It's kind of like stand-up musicians as opposed to stand-up comedy. It's as much comedy as it is the music. It's pretty interesting.
Yep.
Yeah, I remember when it first came out, it was kind of like stereo but going in different directions. Like, you know, there's the humor, which is great, but where's the live music? What is this? And obviously the record company didn't know what to do with it. But, you know, I think it was predating what became the Monkees. They would have out-monkeyed the Monkees, I think, if they had been allowed to continue.
They were going
to
be on TV opposite them.
Is that right? We were opposite them?
Yeah, they
did their TV pilot, and it got the green light, and it was going to air opposite the Monkees. And then, of course, Jan had his near-fatal accident. But talking about the humor was as much just Gary and the guys kind of Gary will have to kind of fine-tune this statement a little bit, but I think just because of the friendship and the bond they have is he was kind of talking about the shorthand of getting through a song of a recording process. It's kind of also there in terms of the way that the give and take they have off each other in general and the friendship and that bond they have is kind of like the Jan and Dean humor thing. I mean, it's just something that's kind of a natural flow with them.
Totally infantile. Totally childish.
But fun to be around.
Yeah.
Oh, I suppose. Oh, yeah, it's fun.
Sometimes. Well, if you're trying to get work done, maybe not. That's a good point. But I guess my I certainly wasn't in the studio with you guys. I just get the sense of a combination of great respect for your music and some of the some of the legacy of, you know, Beach Boys, Jan and Dean, and other kind of music that you're carrying on, certainly in your own way, but also enjoying one another and what you've done. And it's almost like the product is almost an end in itself, although, of course, you want many people to purchase it and enjoy it and pass it on.
Yeah, right.
It just seems like you guys enjoy being together and doing this.
Oh, yeah, we sure do. We don't get to see each other. We don't get to all get together as often as we used to, but when we do, it's a kick, believe me.
And that, Phil, that was actually the real reward for me in all of this was the fact that I was able to do that for them.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
I mean, that was the real kick for me is that, and I didn't, it's not something you realize you're doing.
Uh-huh.
You know, you're just watching them work naturally. And it's not something that I actually thought, oh, gosh, yeah, I'm, aren't I great? Look what I'm doing. It was nothing like that. It was just having the good fortune and the timing of having great like-minded friends work together and, you know, and you know, with great results, fun results.
Well, we're all going to get together this Monday night. We have a big, big, big thing going on here. It's John Stamos' 50th birthday party.
Oh, okay.
Oh, so we're all going to that big party. It's going to be quite something.
So is the Ripper's going to play, or what's the deal?
Oh, he can't afford the Rippers. They're too big now after their Jimmy Fallon show appearance.
That's right,
they don't
man.
Do parties anymore. They just do a little.
He might be able to get Jesse to show up, but the rest of the Rippers now. No chance.
Well, guys, how can, other than, of course, purchasing the CD, how can folks support and encourage the work of Bamboo Trading Company? Like you on Facebook? Send you flowers? What can we do?
Send money. lots of money.
Yeah.
Build us a biplane with our logo on it so that we can,
okay.
So that I can ship these guys off to a private island where they can work on music. Really, just, you know, like, visit the Facebook page just by searching the Bamboo Trading Company. We'll take you right to the page. That'll be cool. The group's got a Twitter page.
Yeah.
Okay.
And actually, in all of this, kind of because this all started with the Return of the Killer Shrews movie and us, you know, having those four songs on, having Shrewd Awakening, Tonga Hut, Don't Say It's Over, and Star at the Beach, that are on the CD, but also in that film, I do want to make, I think I mentioned this yesterday, I want to mention it again, that on Tuesday, October 22nd, that DVD will be available. You can pre-order it now on Amazon, and it'll have the music video on it, and there's like a little bit of a making of the music video, kind of. There's a little bit, it's not really a documentary or anything like that. It's a little bit of a storytelling on how, you know, bringing Dean together with the guy who played him back in the TV, you know, the TV movie, and that's kind of a little bonus too. And so it's some nice bells and whistles to the release, and it'll have both versions of the movie. It'll have the original 59 and then the new one.
Oh, I didn't know
October
that. Have the original.
22nd.
The original on there too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my.
Yeah. Because hey, dogs with rugs go a long way. they really do. So there's that, and then if someone were to visit the Return of the Killer Shrews movie website, which is actually returnofthekillershrewsmovie.com, the group has a page on there too. It just if you go to the homepage, you'll click on new CD, and it takes you. There's a Bamboo Trading Company page there with an interview with Gary and the director, Steve Latchell, and a little bit from Dean talking about kind of a little bit of the process of making the video and writing the song Shrewd Awakening that the video is made for. And so a little bit of a background, you know, a little bit more of a deeper background on the film side of it. And we hope to be posting a new previously unheard skit on the day of the release of the DVD on the website on the Return of the Killer Shrews website, which features James Best and Steve Latchell and Gary.
That's right.
And the skit is called Shrew Island Bar and Grill. Maybe Gary can tell you a little bit about that.
Sure, Gary.
Just a little bit of silliness. With a little bit of terror thrown in, you know, it's just a little non sequitur, kind of a fun little thing. It was fun acting with James Best. He's so good. God, he's so good. His delivery of some of these lines is just so classic.
Well, there was a guy in the video for the movie that you know Dean and Bruce were singing on that wore some weird aviator hat that looks something like you, but I'm sure that was
that
someone else.
I can't claim it. I don't know who that was.
That's Artie Jones.
He's terrifying.
Artie Jones
so Gary,
yeah.
So is this is this a great band ever going to play play live, Bamboo Trading Company?
I'd like
or have
to think
you already?
So, but it's just logistically difficult because we're all involved with other, you know, wage-earning activities. It's hard to get time away, certainly for all of us to have a time in common that we'd all be available. I don't know. I don't know if it's possible unless the money was just so huge. But,
we'll hope that that can happen. That
there
would
be
fantastic.
I'm working on it.
Okay. Well, maybe we'll do a podcast too, live, BTC live and in color. That would be a great, great thing.
In living color.
Yeah.
Listen, we're closing up here, but David, and with Summer Quarterly, Gary, so much with recordings, you both in studio, you both maybe want to release some tidbit of news on any new Brian Wilson songs or Beach Boy release or any teaser you want to put out there before we shut this down?
Wow, I got nothing.
Okay. It was worth asking anyway.
I'll just say that I think people are going to really, really enjoy the Made in California box set. And
I'm curious to see, do you know the track list on that, Dave?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'll send it to you.
Yeah, do. I want to see if there's anything I played on there. I don't know.
Oh, no. If you did, you know they forgot to mention you.
Of course they did.
Oh, yeah. I'll send you a thing right away.
Good. Yeah. When is that released? Is that soon?
That comes out next Tuesday. It comes out next Tuesday.
Oh wow, that's great.
Yeah. It's really cool. It's like this it's a fall kind of yearbook. It's like a yearbook. It's really pretty cool. It's full color and it's got The first half of the book is kind of just quotes from the group, kind of chronologically going through the years and talking about their career, and then it kind of goes into the six CD track by track, and it's just it's really kind of me as a fan, I wish they had taken, even if it's stuff from the vaults, if it's something, for example, from 74, that they would have just put it chronologically wherever 74 was on whichever disc.
Mm-hmm.
Just because then you can kind of hear the progress and the growth of the group, but it's all good, and there's a lot of really cool Dennis stuff on it.
Wow, very good.
Well, guys, David, Gary, thank you so much for this conversation. Fun just to sit back and listen to you gab about Bamboo Trading Company and all sorts of other things. I hope we can get on the line again sometime and talk more things. So
anytime.
Thanks, Gary. David,
okay.
Thanks.
Okay, thank
Don't
you.
Go away.
See you
later.
Don't go away.